My name is Emma Koch, and I am 15 years old. Today is November 24th, and I'm speaking with Tony Koch, who is my dad. We are recording this interview in Westland, Oregon. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child?
Well, I grew up in... I grew up in a small town in Kansas called Atchison, Kansas. I was the third child of four. I have an older brother, an older sister, and a younger brother. My mom's side of the family came from a family of farmers, so we spent a lot of time on the family farm growing up during harvest season, riding in combines and tractors, and a lot of family gatherings with cousins and large groups of people, you know, things that probably aren't as common today as they were back then. Living in a small town in the Midwest, things were of a slower pace. There weren't big cities or large stores or the hustle and bustle of a lot of the things you see around here now. So it was a different upbringing. You found things to do outside, spending time, you know, making your own fun. There wasn't video games, and there wasn't a lot of the things that kids today, you know, spend their time doing. We were outside riding bikes, fishing, and making our own things to do.
Did you like school? Why or why not?
I enjoyed school. I was always fascinated with learning new things, and I think I puzzled my teachers a lot. They had a hard time maybe challenging me in some of the work, and I remember several times, you know, during tests I would often be done before, you know, they would expect, and would really not know what to do with me from that standpoint. So I was often given extra work and activities, and you know, wouldn't often have homework to bring home, and always found that something I wanted, and so the teachers would give me extra work so I could have homework when I went home. You know, I enjoyed early on the math and sciences, and knew that was something I would continue to focus on as I grew up, and ultimately would go into engineering and use those as the basis of my education and career from there.
Tell me about a teacher or other adult that had a big impact on your life while you were growing up.
In my senior year, we had a anatomy teacher. His name was Brian Van Fleet, and I think it was probably the first time we had class. I had a class where the teacher treated us more as equals than as a teacher-student relationship, and it was a higher-level class, and it was more than just the learning. It was more in life lessons and what our career and our life aspirations were, and he challenged us not just from the learning of the class we were taking, but is what we wanted to do with our lives, and you know, urged us to branch out and get out of where we were, and to get out of the city that we were growing up in and go and see the world.
What are your most vivid memories of school?
School. I think it was the friends and not necessarily in the classroom, but, you know, waiting for recess and, you know, the games of kickball or basketball or football, whatever the game of the day was, and you know, that transitioned as you got older into time between classes and hanging out with friends and the memories you made beyond what the classes that you took. I mean, school is great and it teaches you things, but it's a social aspect that I think you take and keep with you forever.
Can you tell me about one of your happiest memories?
So one of my happiest memories, well, it was probably the day you were born, Emma. being our first child, it was something new and something we had looked forward to for a very long time, and to finally get to meet you and welcome you to the world is something that was very special and a very happy day.
What are you most grateful for?
Well, I think it's the health and happiness of our family. Without that, then nothing else really matters. So grateful that you know, we have the group of us that are healthy and happy and have lots of things to look forward to.
What are you proudest of, personally and professionally, in your life?
Proudest and professionally, I think it was my service in the Navy and serving our country and being a Navy officer and being able to, you know, defend our country and support for what I believed in.
When you enlisted, what were some of the reasons that you joined the military, and how did you choose your branch of service?
Well, the branch of service kind of chose me. I was recruited while I was in college into the nuclear program based on being an engineer at Oregon State, and my GPA. The recruiters contacted me and gave me the details of a program as a Navy nuclear engineer, and as I learned more about it and got to go tour different Navy bases and meet different people and be able to see the experiences and the opportunities that I wouldn't otherwise get. You know, coming out of college as a 22-year-old with no experience, I was quickly put into a position of leading a large group of sailors and learning things that I wouldn't even believe possible to learn at the age I was, and having that experience and that relationship with people who end up being as much like family as possible.
What was the basic training like?
To get my commission in the Navy, I spent 13 weeks in officer candidate school in Pensacola, Florida. It was a combination of physical activity and classroom work of learning the history of the Navy, the core traditions, you know, how to be a naval officer, and be a leader in a position that you, at a young age you're thrust into, and being able to deal with stressful situations and work your way through it. And so it was the physical part was probably the most concerning going into it, but in the end it wasn't that hard. It was just part of the routine, and you know, coming out of it you had a new respect of maybe what you held as your values and what you wanted to be as a person, and then an officer in the Navy.
Can you describe a funny moment from being in the military?
A funny moment. Well, there's probably lots. Let me find an appropriate one. We were in the wardroom, and the wardroom is where the officers eat on a ship, and there were four or five of us sitting. It was late at night. It was probably 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and you know, we were just talking, and you had alarms on the ship for different things, and one of the things is if you have a fire on board, and so someone called away a fire in one of the laundry rooms, and one of the guys sitting at the table jumped up and ran out, and he says, "That's my underwear in the laundry." So the dryer caught his underwear on fire.
Where did you serve during the war?
Well, I wasn't really in the war.
During the military?
So while I was in, I served 8 years on active duty. I had one deployment to the Persian Gulf, and spent 6 months continuous underway. Most of that time was spent in the middle of the Gulf, off the coast of Iraq, Iran, and the various countries, patrolling through, doing air patrols and freedom of navigation activities to make sure all the sanctions that were in place were being upheld. And we also took part in an exercise or an operation called God, I forget the name of it now. It might have been Desert Fox.
That was just one day.
So it was a multi-day operation. We were in Singapore at the time, and we were headed on our way over already, but we were given new orders to make best possible speed to the Gulf. So it was a time when Saddam Hussein was still in power of Iraq, and he was kicking out the UN teams and not allowing them to do their reviews of sites. And so in response to it, there were military exercise, and so we were brought in, and my ship and its battle group participated in that exercise.
When you deployed overseas, how'd you tell loved ones you were being deployed?
Well, it wasn't an unknown, so our schedule was pretty firm going into advance, and so we knew when we were leaving, and aside from the ship's crew, there's a support system of the family, and you know, they have the schedule as well, and so they know what's happening and when the ship's gonna be deploying. And some of the dates might be confidential and not communicated, but rough timelines were known. So, you know, leading up to it, there was lots of notice and understanding of what the timeline would be and when it would be to get prepared for.
How did you stay in touch with family and friends back home?
Well, it was different back then. We had limited access to some of the communications we have now. Email was still kind of in its infancy. It was there, but a lot of outages and times where it wasn't connected. You had mail, so, which is probably one of the biggest morale days on the ship, is when mail would arrive on the ship and get distributed, whether it was packages or letters or communications from home. So that was key. And at times you had satellite phones where you could make calls.
What are some things you remember most about your deployment?
Well, I think it was the friends I made. You know, the group of guys that I served with, you know, created a special bond during that time. You were in situations where, you know, you were putting yourself potentially in harm's way, and you had to rely on those around you to make decisions and keep you safe and be there to support whatever was going on. And so those relationships and friends, you know, I made during my tour on board the ship are friends that I still keep today in touch with.
What are some fun things you and your friends did together while you were deployed?
Every Sunday was John Denver Day. And so on Sundays, you wouldn't do training and you wouldn't have any activities other than just normal taking care of the ship and everything going on. So it was a minimal day for activities. And so we would take that day as an opportunity to de-stress. And so we would gather in one of our staterooms and have cups of tea, and we played John Denver and just pretend we weren't out in the middle of the ocean.
Did any of your military friends play pranks on each other? Can you describe a funny one?
Did we play pranks on each other? Yes. You get bored at sea, and there's always one thing or another going on, and to find ways of keeping the I don't call it boredom, but the mundane of day in, day out of being gone from getting to you. So prank-wise, it wasn't just, I mean, it was across the whole ship. We had one of the senior officers in our department. He was an older gentleman, and he had his chair. No one was allowed to sit in his chair, so we kidnapped his chair, and we moved it all over the ship and took pictures of it and sent it to him at different places, and he got so mad at us. We finally gave his chair back, but yeah. In the end, I think he thought it was funny too, because he never knew what his chair was going to be, but we kept moving it and taking pictures and sending it to him.
When did you leave the military, and what was that process like?
When I left active duty, you had to give, as an officer, you had to request to resign your commission, because once you get a commission, it's an act of Congress signed by the president, and it's for life. So to resign your commission, you have to formally request it through a process, and it gets reviewed, and dependent on what's going on, it could be denied if there's a need for sustaining military levels and in the situation. So it's basically a form letter you put in that has all your information and your requested separation date to verify you have met your minimal obligation that you'd signed up for. So that was a year in advance, and once I got my notice, and then with that came my separation date, and it was once again known well in advance of when that date would be. And from there, it was just making preparations of leaving the military and looking for a career in the private sector.
What were your first few months out of the service like?
It was transitioning from being military. That's all I'd ever known as a working career. So transitioning out, I was looking for work, and I had several job opportunities. And when I got out, I was in San Diego, and we wanted to move back up to Pacific Northwest, but unfortunately, at that time there weren't any job opportunities, and so all the offers I had were somewhere other than where we ultimately wanted to live. So we had to look at those opportunities and decide which gave us the opportunity later on to move back up to the Northwest. So we ended up moving to Phoenix, Arizona, and I worked for Honeywell Aerospace in a production supervisor type role, so leading frontline production, which wasn't that different than the military. You had a group of people with a job to do and a objective to reach, and so the similarities were really close between what I did in the military as an officer and leading people in the public sector. So it was an easy transition, and the building never pulled up anchor and went to sea.
Can you tell me about some of the most important lessons you've learned in your life?
Most important lessons is, don't take for granted anything that you have today, because it could be gone tomorrow, and make sure that the decisions you're making are long-term focused and not just for today. If you're only looking at what's best for today, tomorrow will get you. So, making sure you've got a plan for today and into the future.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nope, I think that's all, Emma.
Thank you.
Can I let you go now?